You knew him, didn't you?
Then you had that one little feeling. But you waved it away. You should have listened to that one little feeling. Just like I'm listening to you now. You can talk to me. I'm all a friend you got.
You're not exactly a department favorite.
Things probably changed a lot since you left.
You still got to catch him, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Not that much has changed then, right?
I can assure you all we are taking a 24/7 all-hands-on-deck approach to these cases.
Guy's a shark. If he stops, he dies. He likes to drive. Probably has a decent car, maybe two. High mileage.
You must really like my car.
I do. How's the trunk space?
Something I gotta know. How's a guy with the best clearance rate in the department work 15 years without a promotion?
Maybe I didn't go to the right church.
When I look in your eyes, what I see, it ain't good.
He knew all the details, but he wasn't within 10 miles of the killing.
Why is that? Why is that?
How's the trunk space?
What do you want?
I want to nail the bastard.
For who?
For all of the girls he killed.
I want to nail the bastard too. Difference is, I'm doing it for me. It's the little things, Jimmy. It's the little things that rip you apart. It's the little things that get you caught.
Welcome to the Madcap Movie Review Podcast. I'm Sean.
I'm CL.
I'm Derek.
And today we'll be reviewing The Little Things. The Little Things is a 2021 crime thriller written by John Lee Hancock and stars Denzel Washington, Rami Malek, and Jared Leto. The Little Things was released in theaters on January 29th, 2021. And is available on the HBO Max streaming service until February 28th. Leto has already received Best Supporting Actor nominations at the Golden Globes and the Screen Actors Guild Awards for his performance in this film. Deputy Sheriff Joe Deke Deacon joins forces with Sergeant Jim Baxter to search for a serial killer who's terrorizing Los Angeles in 1990. As they track the culprit, Baxter is unaware that the investigation is dredging up echoes of Deke's past, uncovering disturbing secrets that could threaten more than his case. I'll start off with you, CL. What are your first initial reactions upon seeing this movie?
Okay, and I know, of course, everybody knows this movie stars Denzel Washington and I say Rami Malek. From none other, from Mr. Robot, which is one of my favorite shows, like, of all time. Rami Malek is the star of it. Man, this motherfucker is so weird. The most awkwardest motherfucker I have ever seen in my life on film. Usually, like, in some Mr. Robot shit, that works perfectly fine. But to being the hotshot detective, it really was hard to swallow. You got three great ingredients. You know, like, Jared Leto is great, Rami is great, and Denzel is great. But for whatever reason, when you put them on this sandwich right here, that shit is awful. Or at least the last bite is. You know what I'm saying? That last bite was just hard to swallow. It was something when my girl, within the first like 5 minutes of the movie, Rami Malek's character is giving a speech inside the precinct. And she was like, what's up with him? I'm like, is he the suspect? And you know it's a bad thing when your main character detective is coming off like he's the suspect in like the first time you meet him. So I'm not sure whose fault that is. It may be the director's. It may be Rami's eye circles. But either way,
oh my
that
God.
Shit was hard to get by.
His eye circles. His eye circles.
Damn. The attention to detail.
Yes.
Bro, I mean, look, man, I look at this dude so much. I watched 4 seasons of this cat on Mr. Robot. Like, I love Rami to death, bro. But it's just not the type of move for him.
You know what? I kind of see it the opposite way. Yes, weird looking motherfucker right there. All right. Definitely a weird looking dude, but I think that's exactly why it works. Because the whole time, you could, like, especially towards the end, as they start building and you start getting to the end of that sandwich, you sitting there like, wait a minute. What the hell? Did he do it? Did he do it? Are they sitting there? Because he looks like he could be that type of guy just because of his face. His facial expressions, the whole movie, from the moment you see him to the very end, you're like, yeah, I could see him snapping and just killing somebody. And because he's so weird, eccentric and all that, he might be just clever enough to cover it up and make it look like somebody else. So I honestly feel like depending on how you look at it, it works. They do have the right ingredients for what they actually cooked up at the end there. Still with that damn food analogy. I didn't even do that on purpose. But yeah.
I just spent most of this movie before the end trying to figure out which one of them did it between Denzel and
so Rami. You just knew it was an inside job.
They both came across as putting on this facade of an investigation to cover up their own shit. Honestly, Denzel was more suspect.
Absolutely.
Than Rami, because especially because it took us so long to get what his past was. Like, why was he here? Like, why are they reacting to him the way that they are when he gets involved in this case, you know, with the triple bypass and the divorce and immersing himself in an old case? Like, what was the damn case? And did he kill whoever that caused all this to happen in his life? And we find out later in the movie that he did, and they covered it up. At that point, I was like, okay, Denzel didn't do it.
Okay, for most of the movie, I will say I did not suspect Denzel. I didn't suspect him. I felt like he's probably one of them cops who's probably done the wrong thing for the right reason, quote unquote. But I didn't suspect him really of killing the girl until the very end when they showed mm-hmm. that ending. And then I was kind of, it was like a conflict, a toss up between did he actually do it, or was that strictly a move to alleviate old boy's conscience so that he doesn't evolve into him? Was he saving him that road that he went down? You know, with the red beret or whatever. So that's where I was. But I don't think I ever really fully subscribed to Denzel as the full on, like, yo, he did it.
When they flash back to Denzel earlier in his career, when he shot the little white girl, I looked at the scene. I was like, man, you're a little bit too old to be getting shook and accidentally killing the person that you're looking for. That was a little wild for me.
You know what? A little bit. And I think we can kind of like, as we go along, we can explore kind of like how we got there. It was a bit jarring to see like somebody who was, I guess, revered as somebody who was like one of the top investigators in the precinct or in the department, for him to just slip up like that. Did y'all feel like we needed an entire like stitched together flashback in order for it to make more sense? Because they kept giving us bits and pieces. Of course, because, you know, that's kind of the movie beat. But once it got to the end, I almost felt like they should have just dropped all that at one time. Like, maybe in the middle of the movie, or was it better served just chopped up throughout the movie?
I don't mind chopped up. I just feel like it was too much, and they didn't give you much of anything when they did flashback. Like, because I remember...
That's true.
Y'all can correct me if I'm wrong. Like, I feel like one of the first flashbacks was just him and his partner just walking through the woods. Mm-hmm. And then it went right back to the present. And I was like, well, what the fuck is that for?
I think it was simply just to establish the why he's so tied to this case, because these two girls that he keeps seeing at nighttime when he's trying to sleep, he keeps seeing them staring at him because they're his unfinished business, you know, and they looking at him waiting for him to put their souls to rest by solving their cases. But I looked at it like, okay, I like the way that they actually split it up. The only issue I had with it is that they never tied a ribbon on it at the end. You know, they didn't just be like, all right, here's what happened. Here's who did it. You know, here's who actually did it. And that's the only issue I really had with that whole approach. I never actually got to find out which one of these motherfuckers did it or did any of them do it. So that kind of bothered me. But that's what made it. Well, I don't want to throw that part out there too early, but, you know, but that was part of what worked for the movie.
So that first scene is the girl driving in the car. And she's being pursued by the killer, okay? And she does the dumb white girl in a horror movie thing.
The dumbest shit.
Son.
Like, let's stop at this abandoned-ass restaurant and get out the car. You're dead.
Yeah. Like, you're getting out the car. Like, the thing that can go fast, and you're going to opt for the feet.
And not only after... You couldn't get in the restaurant. Now you running in the field. Yeah. I'm gonna
pick out a good grave for myself.
Yeah. That's exactly hurry what up. It was. I'm going to die. Let me find the spot. So she runs out into the street and she jumps in front of the truck. And then that's the last that we see her for a little bit. I mean, one can assume that she got killed because it immediately went to a scene where a girl had been murdered. But then she pops back up in the police station to identify a suspect, which she sees Jared Leto's character in handcuffs. And then a little bit later, she tries to, you know, let me see him up close so I can pick this dude. But they can't use her identification because she already saw him in cuffs. And then that's it of her. What was the point of her, period? You take her involvement at a police station out, I really don't think it changes the movie.
Go ahead, Derek.
Yeah, I disagree, just because it helps set up everything about Jared Leto's character. Because if you paid attention into the one part, I think they mentioned it. They said he went in and confessed to a murder or something like that before?
Yeah, he confessed to a murder and then...
found out to be he was lying. So they already... Like, the cops already had a hard-on for this cat. And he knew that Denzel's character already had a hard-on for him at that point, I think. So they got that. So then that established helps kind of start painting the picture of him like, yo, he looks like that dude from the beginning. Because they never showed the guy. They just showed that he had long hair and wore boots like Jared Leto's character and had, like, a funny little walk. Same as Jared Leto's character. You know, so it helps to kind of just obscure everything and keep you off your... you know, keep you off the scent as a viewer. That was literally, I think that was just her purpose. She was a smokescreen. That's all she was.
You know, I really could not find the thread for her. And I think, Derek, you made a good point about how that it does help play up Jared Leto's character. But as far as like any type of resolution when it came to that thread, it just kind of went into the ether. And that did kind of bother me. I'm just like, okay, so are we going to use her? Like, she's just no good now. And then on top of that, the fact that they set it up for her to see him and then she can't do anything further. It kind of is like they just dead ended it just because they couldn't really figure out what else to do. And I don't really appreciate when people take shortcuts in filmmaking and TV, but nonetheless, that's just how they planned it. Now, me personally, I could have used the her getting killed or something later on, just so there's no witnesses, and then it would have like felt like, okay, then he's definitely the killer. You know, like there was nothing that helped me confirm who was the killer or who was the suspect or anything, you know, when it came to her. So it's like it's just there.
I guess that kind of fits into the something that we saw throughout this entire film. There's not a lot of resolution, period.
Like, yeah. I'm about to say, do I need to bust out of the Leah? We need a resolution out here. Lord.
I do think that that was kind of the goal. That might have been part of the goal of the director, maybe, to just kind of paint what actual cops go through. I mean, because how many of these cases actually don't get solved? How many of them just turn into cold cases? And hell, enough of them that they got a never-ending series about it on TV, cold cases. Mm-hmm. So clearly enough of them go unsolved. So it might have just been designed to be that. But okay, you're never going to know. You're going to be in suspense. You're going to talk about the ending of this movie forever and ever. Amen. And we're not going to tell you. That just might have been it.
I don't think I've ever seen a dynamic between those two type of cops before that we saw in this movie between Deacon and Baxter. It feels like Baxter was more so, I'm aware of this guy. I'm going to prove I'm better than him. Whereas Deacon was more so, he kind of looked down on old buddy at first, but then started to warm up to him. And it was more so of, I see myself in this dude, so he can rock with me. I'm a mentor him. And then they started to work together. What did y'all think of the dynamic between Deacon and Baxter in this movie and how it differed from other pairings that you've seen?
Why is it so different? You know, like I was burning to hear your explanation of like, because this motherfucker is just so goddamn awkward, you know, looking at Rami Malek being a detective alongside Denzel Washington is not like Ethan Hawke next to Denzel Washington. You know, it's just not the same. Shout out to Ethan Hawke for Good Lord Bird. You that motherfucker killed this shit. I love that fucking show. But Baxter does not look like a complete person. Like, even like, let's even take it to the point where like Joe comes over for breakfast and meets the wife and the kid. I'm like, I'm still not buying this nigga as a family man. It just like something that like he got some secrets. You know what I'm saying? My girl was like, he seemed like he like that real freaky stuff that don't nobody like talking about in public.
Can I just say this real quick?
Go ahead.
Like that scene during breakfast, it seemed like her daughter was more into Deacon how your daughter gonna be more into the black old man that coming to your house?
Look, man, that Denzel charm is no joke, bro. It affects all ages. It's like you can't run from that shit. That dude is just charismatic out the wahoo, bro. Watching them try to interact and try to come across, and I guess the one part where Joe said something about, it's like, oh, I was like, y'all doing things a little different. Are we still out here, you know, catching the bad guys? Or it's all right, then things still the same then. You know what I'm saying? It's just like seeming old school, going doing the job and really staying committed. And my man's over here, like you said, he sees that in him. He's like, okay, this dude is really committed. And when they find out that he's sticking around to finish the investigation, talking about he's on vacation, and Rami was like, I'm cool with it. I was like, okay. So he's not as threatened. Like, he felt all right about this dude being around, like he's an actual asset. So the character, as far as the mentality, was great for the story, but the execution is up for interpretation.
It was an awkward pairing, but it's one of those same thing that makes you laugh, makes you cry kind of things, you know, because that same awkwardness is part of what made the pairing so great in terms of the story. I don't know. It added to Baxter's character and the turn that he took in the movie. It made it so believable, the fact that he is so damn awkward. Because if you really look, if they had cast somebody else as that part, like somebody more charismatic, like a Brad Pitt or somebody like that, you know, who got a lot of on-screen charm, could you really see him making that turn as easily and believing throughout the whole movie, oh, this dude might have done some shit that we don't know about? This dude might be capable of killing his whole family the way he's staring at them in that pool. Like, you wouldn't know.
I thought that man was about to take the dive for real. I'm just looking at the water like, is he going in? Is he going in? Is he going in?
That was weird. If I was one of them children and my pops staring at me like that, I'd have just got out the pool and walked away. So.
Like, no, I can go back inside. Mm-hmm. We're done with this today.
Like, I gotta tell my mama. Like, this is not cool.
Daddy got murder in his eyes today, mommy.
I had to keep on reminding myself that this movie was taking place in the 90s. Did y'all have to do that?
I did. My girl kept asking, is this based on the true story? I was like, I don't think so, but it is a period piece because, like, I'm like, man, why I keep saying these old ass cars? These guys,
yeah.
Like, why do you keep, like, where's the phones at? And it didn't really hit me. I was like, oh, this is in the 90s. This is definitely a throwback joint. And I don't think they did a great job of, like, putting anything remotely reminding you that it's the 90s. Like, they didn't have any songs. They didn't have any movie posters. Nobody talked about events. You know, usually you have some earmark conversations or some, like, touch points that reminds you what year it is. You know, they usually throw something in there, but it was nothing. So, yeah, I forgot completely.
Definitely. It completely slipped my mind. Like, while he's sitting there running, they calling pay phones and using all these pay phones, I'm sitting there looking at it as if I'm back in the 90s, not even thinking about it. Like, yeah, it's run-of-the-mill stuff. Yeah, we call pay phones. We know the number for that pay phone over there and whatever, whatever. Like, it's nothing. You know, but yeah, money pull out your beeper, something hit you on the hip, da-da-da. Like, it's normal. I'm sitting there. I totally forgot. I don't know if I was just so immersed in it and trying to figure it out and follow it. So I couldn't tell for me. I couldn't rationalize. Was it bad storytelling or was it really good storytelling? And I wasn't even thinking about it. I just immersed myself in the 90s and didn't think about it. I still can't reconcile which one it is.
Yeah, it was certain moments that just popped up and reminded me when this movie was taking place. Like in the car when there's some beeping that starts. And I'm like, what the fuck is that? Then my man pulls out a beeper. And I was like, oh, shit, a beeper.
Right. He's the drug dealer.
Going back to your point, CL, about what movies tend to do to put you in the time frame of a movie, I think a lot of times we talk about what movies do too much to put you in a time space. Like, they do the things to remind you, like, we're in the 70s or we're in the 80s, and it's a lot. Like, it's too much. But this movie just relied on the story and the setting. And, I mean, even just something as small as Deacon going to follow a lead at a fucking a washer and dryer store.
Oh, yeah, the appliance.
Or repair store, yeah.
Appliance repair store.
You got no fucking appliance repair stores now.
Right? And matter of fact, there was two of them on the same block. Like, what are the odds of that in this day and age? You come across two appliance spots and everybody has paper records. You know, she put her that big ass ledger and shit. Like, here's all of my appointments and everybody that worked. I was like, what the hell is that? I'm like, yo, this was some real throwback shit in there. Like, they did have some moments, but it wasn't like a full-on character. It was really like background for everything, but it didn't really play a big role. You know, sometimes like where like the city plays a role and you can kind of feel that. It's like, I didn't really feel it. It just had some beeps like, oh, I forgot about that. You know, like you said, the payphone, the beeper, it's just different things that remind you, oh yeah, you're in the 90s.
Okay, let's jump into it. All right,
you ready to talk about this shit, man? Is it time to talk about this shit? Because we're gonna rip this month.
Let's talk about this ending. We often talk about endings of movies. They're good, they suck. This movie definitely sticks out as one that was a slow build, but when it got to that ending, then shit really starts to pop off. Watching that sequence of events at the end of this movie, what's your reaction to that? From the time that Sparma takes Baxter to the desert to Denzel wrapping up the little things.
Dude, that part was so soap opera-ish to me, son, because I'm sitting there, like, my emotions was getting into it at that point. I'm not even going front. I'm sitting there screaming at the movie, like, stereotypical black dude in the theater. I'm sitting there, hey, what you getting in the car for? Don't get in the car with him. What the hell you doing? Follow him in your car. Why would you get in the car? I'm sitting there screaming. So I'm sitting there like, oh, this dude gonna die. All right, so that's what's gonna happen. So he did it. He gonna kill the cop. He killed that girl. And Denzel never gonna find out what happened now. He just gonna be sitting there tortured for the rest of his life. And then when my man turned the tables on him and he's just effing with him. Got him digging all them damn holes, just fucking with him.
Dumb ass.
I'm sitting there like, you got the gun. How the hell are you gonna let him make you dig when you got the gun?
What? Say it again. Say it again, Derek.
How does that happen? I got the gun. Better believe you doing whatever I want.
That whole time.
That hot one. Like, come on, son.
That whole time, I'm staring at his hip the whole time. Like, that's a gun right there. But Sparma has the power. The fuck is wrong with you, dude?
Yo, I want to shout out the cameraman because the way they were working them camera angles, they kept making it look like my man Sparma was going to go for that joint. I was like, this is it. This is it. Oh, shit. It's going to happen. Like, they had me on the edge of my seat. That whole time, they had me on the edge of my seat. And I'm thinking, Denzel going to make it just a second too late. He going to get it just a second too late while dude's throwing Baxter's body in one of them freaking holes. That's literally how I thought it was going to play out.
Yo, especially when Deacon got there and drove past it.
Right. Yeah. I knew he was running out of time.
Yeah, I was like, oh, yo, Baxter's fucked. He just went right past it. By the time he come back, he going to be gone.
Yes, I wanted to know who actually committed the murders. I would love to have found out, but I will say I feel like Sparma got everything he deserved. He got everything he wanted and everything he deserved. Because for one, he was just one of them assholes that want to just impede murder investigations. So you going in there and admitting to some murder that you didn't commit allows the killer, the real killer, to keep running free and killing more people because they putting all that energy and resources into you. And then he talked himself into his own grave. The second he started talking about, I seen your two little girls and your wife. You can't protect them. The second he the two little girls and wife came out of his mouth, he should have just laid down in one of them holes his damn self.
Yeah.
He should have said it as he was getting down and laying on his back because he was a dead man. So he got what he deserved, as far as I'm concerned.
Blue child. I mean, Lord. I hesitate to say this might be like an all-time bad ending because there's so many movies, so many TV shows. Derek said one of the worst endings, which is Dexter. Like, if you ever watched Dexter, that show was so great. And then it gets to the end and, like, between the incest and the bullshit, like, it's terrible. So when we get to this movie and we get toward the end, they went full power because he should have died at least 6 times before they even got all the way to digging the holes. There was no regard for continuity or plot bearing things. Like, nothing came to really roost. It could have been a whole separate incident because there was nothing that made Baxter's character think that he really knew where that girl was. There was nothing that made Baxter feel like I should get in this car and go somewhere and do what he tells me to do. But for some reason, he decides that this is the best idea on the planet Earth right now. I will not wait for my partner, you know, which what Sparma calls him, his butt buddy, he's not invited. Let me say this the right way. But like, I felt like he was trying to hint at something, but not hint at something at the same time. Like, because when he starts talking about his girl and his family, like, oh, so you know a little bit about this dude. I'm like, I don't think that was just an offshoot comment, but I'm going to leave that alone. He could not find a good idea to save his life. And I really thought that, you know, like Derek said, when they move that camera angle and you just see them right there with that gun, like, all it takes is one time, dig a hole, bow, kick him in the back, and he gone. It just never happens. And then the fact that my man just gets hit with the shovel and that's kind of it. I don't know. Like, I was looking for more. I thought this dude was a little bit more sinister. Turns out he's just a nice practical joker. You know, we thought he was a complete psychopath, but we can't tell because everything is inconclusive. Now, is it enough for the floorboard treasure chest? Did y'all feel like that was enough to convict him as the killer?
Nope.
No.
Not even close?
I didn't feel like it was enough to convict him, but that's what made me start thinking he was the killer.
And it was those like, look, was it just the newspaper clippings or was there actual trinkets? Because they moved too fast in that scene for you to catch everything that's in the floorboard. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the part that really drives me. It's like, I almost feel like I need to go back to that part, freeze frame it, and check everything that was underneath it to make sure I didn't miss anything.
Or maybe was that the point to you go through it quickly? If you focus too much on it, and I'm not saying this is right or wrong, but I feel like the end of this movie, the purpose was not to give you any resolution, to make you have more questions than answers. And maybe if they would have spent more time there, we would have been more fixated on Spermer's character. That makes sense.
It makes sense to me. And that whole treasure chest thing, it worked perfectly for a viewer like me, just because I know someone who's actually like him, who is fascinated by serial killers. They actually have like a favorite serial killer. Like, you know, like, that's weird, man. Son. It's weird. That's, I ain't saying weird, I'm that son. Person. I ain't, I that person. Shit. Don't look at me. I ain't doing it.
I'm just saying, like, anybody who's listening to this podcast right now and you can have a favorite serial killer, you weird as fuck. I'm just going to say
it right now. Don't, fuck how you don't hang around me.
Weird, fam. I'm just have saying, a favorite so I, story. But not so
I understood it. That's all I'm saying. I understood that type of person. Not that I understand his fascination with serial killers, because I don't. But I know that type of person exists. It was good for getting a person like me caught up who actually know that, yeah, that's a real thing. I've actually seen it. It's not some bullshit.
Once Baxter got into that car, I was just saying in my head, you just a dumbass. Over and over and over. When they got to the field, I was like, oh, you just going to go. You a whole cop, bro. You a whole detective. But you going to literally go to an open field by yourself with the person that you're fixated on being a serial killer and do his bidding. Like, out in that field, Baxter was Spermer's bitch.
All day.
Digging hole after hole after hole. It's like, yo, after you know, maybe the first hole was a mistake. It's like, oh, not right here, over here. Like, I don't want to give him no grace because he shouldn't have dug no hole. But to keep on doing it, use the bitch.
Hey, man, I think Sparmer might have got it from Baxter's wife on what to tell him, on how to get it. Get whatever he's out of him.
Plot twist.
I was like, you got real familiar with their family. It's like I said, it's like, what else do you know about this cat? And real quick, does that make Baxter not a great detective? Because he called my man from the payphone and told him to meet him at the restaurant or the bar and didn't show up so he could actually stall him. Instead, he waits and watches for him to come back and then doesn't come back. The police come back. So I felt like you might be a questionable judge of, or not judge, but you make questionable decisions as a detective.
So from what they set Baxter up to be, you know, this next great detective, he's the bright star of our department. The moment Deacon steps into the picture and they start working this case together, I start questioning Baxter's skills, because where would you be without your team? Because even when he's doing things on his own, you know, he's being a delegator. He's telling his team, you know, get this for me, do this for me so I can know. Or he's putting pressure on the fingerprint dude to do some shit that he shouldn't do. Feel like he's taking shortcuts and leaning on other people, which fits into the relationship with Deacon, because Deacon comes into the picture and does the work. Baxter is where he is in this investigation because of Deacon. And I don't feel like he would have gotten that far without Deacon's presence. So I question his skills holistically as a detective.
I hate just beating on Robbie like this, bro, but him trying to bark out orders as anybody, like, I'm still not doing shit. Like, you can tell me to scream all you want. Like, nigga, whatever, bro. I get this shit done when I get to it. It's like, you ain't intimidating me.
So they still dead. They ain't going nowhere. Fuck out of here.
Your funny ass looking face, man. Get the fuck out of here.
Fuck out of here, man.
But yo,
hack a database, bitch.
So going back to the desert, I was disappointed that shovel took Spermer out. Like, once he got hit with the shovel, I was expecting some scream type shit, and he was about to pop back up, and they would have had to shoot him in the head or something.
You know what? It wasn't disappointing. I felt the hit to the head with the shovel was gratifying because it was personal. That's a personal ass kill. Like, a gun is very impersonal. You kill somebody with a shovel, that's okay. Very personal, you know, and full of emotion right there. And he, I feel like I said, he deserved that shit. So he deserved a nice up close and personal kill, not the mercy of a bullet. You know, he deserved to feel that ping upside his joint before he's on his way up out of here.
The upper room with Jesus.
I like that. And plus, I think it lets you know that he wasn't the killer. That's the one thing I came away with that. Because if he was the killer, they would have gave him that Superman shit where he like, oh, and pop back up out of here like he ate a senzu bean or something. You know? He had been good to go.
I ain't gonna front. Like, I was a little disappointed by him going out with just the shovel. And the fact that it just took one blow and Baxter didn't either go off more, because I like beating somebody down to the point where you just lose control. It's just a little bit more dramatic, like, oh shit, what have I done? But it was just like, I'm digging. Shut the fuck up. Oh shit, what did I do? You know, it was just so abrupt. It's like, I could feel it boiling, but the payoff was just too fast. You know?
Yeah.
I'm used to my unintentional killings have a little bit more pouring out of passion.
Like, you do this shit every Thursday. I'm used to my unintentional killings. When I do it, I know. Like, goddamn. I'm sitting there like, good thing we on the internet, motherfucker.
Hey, man. No, I'm just thinking like of like between Power. You know what? I've been watching Spartacus. I will say that. I've been watching a lot of Spartacus. And if you know anything about this show, a lot of people's getting their head beat in. You know what I'm saying? It ain't just like they're getting beat up. Like, the whole face is coming apart when they're beating up somebody. And so, you know, transitioning to this movie, and I just like, doom! Oh, that's it. You know, it's just, it left just a little bit to be desired.
I did want him to go in a little more with that shovel. I'm not going front, but I see why they did it. Because it was meant to portray kind of like a psychological break on his part, you know, on Baxter's part. Because, I mean, well, obviously, I've never killed anybody. But we've all had one of the moments where you snapping. And then when you look up, you like, oh, shit. I'm sorry. You know, like, everybody, either you said something or you did something, but everybody's had one of the moments, and it's like, that was his moment where he just snapped and didn't know what the hell happened. I feel like the Spartacus kills where they just like turning people face in the soup. You know, that's like some rage, some straight up rage. Yo, like, I was fighting for my life and I'm just so happy that I fucking won. You know? So it's different.
Is it a consensus that we all believe that he was innocent? Because I'll say this. The first time he said, the truth is, I didn't kill anyone, I didn't believe it. The second time he said it, I was like, at this point, I don't think you did it.
I believed him. Because he looked like one of them assholes that would just fuck with you. Just because that's his funny. That's what he thinks is funny. To see people losing their complete shit, you know, over something and obsessing over it. Yeah. I think he was innocent.
I felt like he was innocent, you know, until we got the clippings. But I think one thing that just kept me guessing so much was that bullet fragment that was in the apartment, or it appeared to be in the apartment. I wasn't sure if it was actually there or not. But that made me either feel like this dude is too close and he knows something. Like, he almost feels like he's involved. Like, you need to go to jail just because you creepy as fuck and you have the potential to do some shit. So you don't need to be on the outside. So even if he was innocent, you still need to go to jail. Give me the creeps. It's like you watch crime. It's like you watch ID Network. You watch the guy that you listen to Serial. You got Snap. Like, like, you on everything, bro. And then the way you driving, like you getting followed and shit, and you just look at Denzel. You know, we didn't even really talk about that car chase scene.
Yeah, that was wild.
That was that hilarious,
shit,
bro.
That was bananas.
That shit was hilarious, bro.
But like the whole time, I'm just like, yo, what is going on? Like, you're aware. So you're not going to try to clear your name. You're not going to try to make it seem like you're not doing anything wrong. You're just feeding this shit and feeding it and feeding it. And people like that get on my damn nerves. So, I'm gonna have to say, you know, guilty by association to that behavior.
All right. So movies gotta have a good guy, bad guy, a hero, and a villain. Watching this movie, The Little Things, do we have good guys? Do we have a villain? Or do you think, as my opinion is, there's a theme that acts as the villain overall in the movie? And it applies to all three of our central characters. I believe that all three of them are villains in a certain way. And that's due to a trait that they all share, which is obsession.
I agree with that. I totally agree with that. I was going to say that I feel like all three of them had a little bit of villain. And I feel like it was on purpose that in that final scene, Denzel sent that envelope, the manila envelope to Remy. His character said no angels, you know, because everybody had a little bit of that devil in them. They all had their own degree of it. You know, they all did their own dirt to a certain degree. You know, were all wrong about something. Yeah, so there were no real bad guys in the movie when you think about it. No one did anything inherent. Denzel probably did the worst thing in the movie.
Yeah.
Because he killed somebody and then covered it up. He did the worst thing. Yet he was obsessing trying to solve these damn murders. So they all had something.
He just reminded me. I just thought he was just the man when he came back into the station. I didn't think that he was, because he was a cover up and everybody that he talked to was involved in that shit. I'm like, oh, yeah. Back? Oh, it's you again. Okay. You know, you might want to just go home, you know, not so quietly. But
which is kind of foolish, because all of them helped him cover it up. So none of them should have that attitude that they do, because if one of them go down, all of them would go down.
Going down.
That's why they want his ass to get up out of there. I get it. Let me get through. What you doing back here, son?
Yo,
we said we wasn't gonna talk about this shit no more.
Like we said separate ways. Like, what are you coming back here? But yo, I think you hit it, man. They all had some real character flaws around obsession, as far as, you know, the case. You know, what's really driving them. And I'm trying to figure out, was Baxter already like that, or was that the competitiveness that really drove him to be a little bit more obsessive?
I would kind of say that he already had it in him a little bit, especially when Deacon showed up on the scene with his background. He kind of set that up a notch. And then the deeper that he got into the case and so fixated on this one person, now you're obsessed. You're obsessed with solving the case. You're obsessed with being the hero. You're obsessed with locking this one particular guy up.
Yeah, I agree. He definitely has some of that Harvey Dent syndrome, you know. I feel like you saw it at his first news conference before he knew who Deacon was, you know, and he's just kind of just... He almost had that thing, was like, how dare you question me? Mm-hmm. He had that kind of position to himself, that kind of stature or whatever. So, yeah, I definitely think it was a lot of his ego involved in there, too. So,
and it's funny how those bookends go. When we first see him, he's so full of himself, so sure of himself. But our last image of him is... broke all the fuck down.
And they told him not to F with Deke. They said, look, man, you're gonna leave you in a bad spot, bro.
And he's like, you are not gonna be the same. You know, he's like, this one ain't shit nigga that you do not need to be messing with. I did notice, like, when I just to encapsulate the competition thing, he kept saying, it's like, oh, is he going to solve my case before me? And every time he kept throwing that out there, like, I could do this shit. I could do, you know what? He realizes he's a little out of his league when he's working closely with Deke, because Deke is on a whole nother level of obsessiveness. And I don't think he even realized that you could even get to that level. And then I want to throw this one out here too. What do you guys feel about the placement of the title in the, of the movie in the movie? You know, it's the little things that get you caught. Where did that leave your brain?
That shit was genius.
It was.
That shit was genius, because that made me say, did Denzel do this shit?
What? Yes.
I wasn't mad at it at all. Like, I feel like that's one of the things that I was waiting on the entire movie. Like, where is this title going to fit in? Like, somebody's going to drop this line. And when Denzel did it, I was like, fucking Denzel. Yes. Yes. That's it. So little things that get you caught. Fuck yeah. Give me that sound bite.
Little things, Jimmy. It's the little things that rip you apart. It's the little things that get you caught.
Turns out it was just about that cover up, but yeah, I thought he might have been the killer. I thought he might have been the killer the first time you said that shit, though. I ain't gonna front.
That was genius, bro. That was pure genius, the way they worked that in there.
When talk about my favorite scene in the movie, this is where I was hoping that one of y'all would bring up that car chase. But mine definitely was as soon as Deacon showed up to the desert and he just went into straight cover-up mode. Like, it was just so fucking natural. Like, took the keys, I'll be back in a couple hours. My man had the damn trash bags already in the car.
He knew how long it would take.
Just like, yo, toss the key. Next time we see the car, it's been stripped.
Oh, bricks.
That was some 90s shit for your ass right there.
That was
from the moment that Deke found out about Farmer being killed till the barrette. That was my favorite sequence of the movie. What about y'all? What were your favorite scenes?
Yeah, it's hard for me to say I have a favorite. I didn't really have a favorite scene per se. I mean, but if I had to pick something, I'd probably go with what you said about that whole sequence of the cover up. But just to not be the same, I'm going to go with the car chase. Because I just enjoyed the whole game of cat and mouse, where he's sitting there just like watching them. And then he peels off and they just keep switching sides. And I legit thought when Jared's character came back up that on-ramp to pull up next to Denzel, I thought he was going to empty into him.
I did too.
I literally thought, I was like, yo, this is it. He's going to dump into him. Like, and the way he's just looking at him like, yeah, you know I'm smarter than you, right? That's what that whole thing was. And I was like, yo, that's a cocky motherfucker. Like, it was so good for building up his character. That whole exchange.
Then he dropped the line, like, how's the trunk space in there?
Yo.
With the fucking weirdest look of all time on his face. But like, yo, Jared Leto is, he is great at being weird as fuck, bro. Like, that dude, that was too on point.
Which kind of makes me question him personally.
A little bit.
Like, he's done this before.
Just a little bit, bro.
Like, you look too good with this in multiple spaces. What do you do in your private life?
Right. Somebody keep an eye on Jared. You know what I'm saying? How many drinks he had today? Okay. All right. Cool. If I'm going to pick a different scene from everybody, because I do love that car chase scene, it probably would be the first interrogation where Denzel drops the Mary Roberts, and then the dude like stands up and is like looking at the glass like, I know he's out there.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, yo, what the fuck did Denzel do to this dude?
Yeah.
I'm like, like, he really must have tore his ass up, because like, as soon as that name come, like, everything about his demeanor changed.
Mm-hmm.
Did he kill himself?
Yep, but that
he did. And so, like, that one right there was like, oh, it kind of set the tone for, I'm like, this motherfucker might be crazy as fuck. He might be the killer. Like, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
That's really when I start questioning everything.
Mm-hmm.
So that's probably my favorite scene, just because of what it does for the rest of the movie.
So to knock this out, let's give our award for overall enjoyment of The Little Things. If you love the film, give it an Image Award. If you feel it was good but not great, take it down the line and give it a Soul Train Award. If the movie was just all right with you, hook it up with a Source Award. Or if you're dumping this movie in one of them graves that dumbass dug, get that shit a BET Award. So I'll go to you, Derek, first. What are you going to give The Little Things?
I'd give it a Soul Train Award. I know I'd never watch it again, but it was good. Like, it literally had me on my seat, not able to figure it out. Normally, I feel like you could see everything coming. I didn't see most of the things that happened in this movie coming at all. You know, most of the plot twists and all that. So I'll give it a Soul Train Award because I really like the story and everything like that. So
yeah.
Well, my girl said, fuck this movie after she finished this shit. When she got to the end. She was just like, well, straight up, fuck this movie, yo. Like, I hate this shit. Like, why did they just do that to me at the end? It's like, I was good up until then. And so, like, I'm like, I was kind of right there with her. I was like, I can't believe this is the end of the movie. I'm going to say, like, a Source Award just because, like, that shit is hard. Between the ending and then Rami Malek. Like, Derek, you seem to, like, be able to buy into that shit a little bit more than me. But between him looking awkward as a family man, looking like the suspect 5 minutes into the movie, trying to bark orders and not intimidating nobody. It's like, bro, this shit was just hard to fucking buy. And, you know, let me not say, I was going to say, I'm like, I don't know how he got that role. You know, I understand why you would give it to him per se. It's like, I don't know if they screen tested this shit. Did they just hand it to this nigga? What? But whatever, man. It's not coming back on my screen ever again. So Source Award, and I'm just leaving it at that.
Yo, so it was leaning heavy on the Source Award side for me for a while. And I was like, yo, I'm never going to watch this movie again. But as the movie kept going, it started to pull me in a little bit more when I started to ask more questions. Like I told y'all before, you know, I thought Denzel was a suspect from jump. But when I started questioning that and getting deeper into the plot of the movie, I started to enjoy it a little bit more. We already talked about that last sequence. So with that, Denzel's performance, I'm kind of with CL a little bit on Remy's performance. It wasn't my favorite, but Denzel and Jared saves this movie. So I'm going to give it a Soul Train Award as well. I might look at it one more time just to see if I missed anything. There were some points at the beginning of the movie where I started to drift off a little bit, like I was waiting for the movie to catch me. So I could see looking at it one more time, but after that, yeah, that's about it for me.
I might have to agree with Sean. I may have just told a lie. I might look at it one more time, like you said, just to see if I missed anything. I'm like, give it one more shot, because I'm like, it is Denzel.
Mm-hmm.
And you like you said, the rest of the movie is pretty decent. So it's like, if there was one in between Soul Train and Source Award, it would probably get it. You know what I'm saying? Like maybe like a fucking YouTube award, some shit. Like, but it's enough there, you know, to make a good movie or not to like hate yourself on the way.
Fuck, I just watched this for. The
fuck, I just did this to myself for.
Wasted 2 hours.
All right, so next up for the Madcap crew, we'll be reviewing Soul. Soul is a 2020 animated film produced by Pixar Animation Studios, released by Walt Disney Pictures. Soul is co-directed and co-written by Kemp Powers. Powers also wrote One Night in Miami. The film stars the voices of Jamie Foxx, Tina Fey, Felicia Rashad, Questlove, and Angela Bassett. Soul is the first Pixar film to feature an African-American protagonist. Soul is our first animated film review, so we're definitely looking forward to chopping it up on that next week. But before we get out of here, remember to subscribe to the show, rate and review us. We're on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, and Amazon Music. We're everywhere. Follow the show on Twitter and Instagram at MadCatPod. Give us a like over on Facebook at the Madcap Movie Review Podcast. Until next time, for my co-hosts, CL and Derek, this is Sean. And we'll be back with you next week with our soul review. Peace.